Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Steve, welcome to the podcast, bro. We've already had a chance to catch up, but I wanted to get you on here and talk to all of our advisors. I know you know our space. So if you can start kind of giving your background, and then we're going to jump into talent and how can business owners be better at getting talent?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Sten. And, I just want to congratulate you on this platform that you've built and how generous you are to share it with other people, because I know a lot of people that listen and it's very, very helpful for them. So it's an honor to be here. My background, so I started in the financial services business, like many and many more that have tried and failed, but I was 20 years old. And I was, the intern advisor at New York Life Insurance Company, was the top intern in the company. Funny story. There's like that contest, right, where whoever sells the most, they throw a big party for you. And they found out I lived in Alaska and they're like, never mind, we're not throwing a party for you. So I spent 4.5 years as, technically an agent, registered rep, 663. And then I wanted out of Alaska, and that was before all the technology that we have. And so if you moved your practice, it was literally starting all over, and that, I was not going to do that 4.5 years again, because we all know that's the hardest. So I found out if I went into leadership and started recruiting and building a team of advisors, then if I did well enough, they would move me, pay to move me, send me somewhere else, and give me an office to run so I didn't have to start over from scratch. So I did that. Was a partner, senior partner, and managing partner, was the youngest at the company at the time at each of those junctures. I built a team of about 40. When I finally made managing partner, I got to go to luxurious Lubbock, Texas, where I experienced college football for the first time in my life. And fortunately, Patrick Mahomes was going to college there when I was there. So that was a cool experience. Spent 2.5 years running the West Texas offices for New York Life. We grew from 40 to 100 advisors over 2.5 years. Had amazing experience there. Had an amazing leadership team, amazing team there. And then moved to Minnesota and took over running New York Life's offices in Minnesota. And that was really where I learned a lot more about the holistic advisory world, because, in Alaska and in West Texas, New York Life was really the only game in town, other than a few small boutique advisory firms. And coming to Minnesota, we've got all kinds of competition that was headquartered there. And, people, the average net worth of people had an extra zero on it, and just required a lot more sophisticated levels of planning and engagement. And so it took me a long time to figure out, how do I recruit and build an office and grow an office in that landscape? Then COVID hit, everyone goes home, we're all working virtually. And ultimately, after about 3.5 years in Minnesota, at New York Life, I said, that's it. I need to go do my own thing. I was not a business owner anymore. And I, appreciate what you do in building your business. I love advisors because they're all running their own businesses. I was not anymore. I was a corporate executive doing the bidding of the mothership. And so a year and a half ago, I left my 17-year career at New York Life. Left a very lucrative position to start my own company, which is the Well Recruiting Solutions. We've grown in the last year to 38 professionals that, the majority of our clients are in the wealth management financial advisory space.
Nice. So what was the triggering event to go from, obviously you were in the space of recruiting and developing already. What made you kind of jump over to that space and say, this is where I want to spend all my time?
Yeah. I didn't actually know. I was in the process of buying a firm. And so I, did the right thing. I told my boss, hey, I'm probably not going to be here at the end of the year. And the next week, the deal to buy the firm fell through. The next week I got fired. And so God was like, hey, you're done. And I'm like,
yeah, I guess so.
Let's go. And so actually, I didn't know. I didn't know what I was going to do. I would literally wake up Monday morning. I would pray and fast and say, Lord, what kind of business model do you want me to look at this week? And I would hop on a plane and go meet a buddy in another town and shadow his business. I would hop on the phone and just do a bunch of Zoom interviews with, you know, people running different companies. And the next Monday, I would pray and fast again. All right, Lord, is that the direction you want me to go? Nope. Okay, what's next? And so honestly, the truth was I was in India. I'm on the board for a nonprofit over there. And I'm in the middle of people who literally have nothing, like nothing to their name. They're living on $50 a month. And the current idea then was to start a recruiting company. And so they're asking me, Steve, what are you going to do when you get back to America? And I told them about this company I was going to start. And 30 minutes later, I looked up. I'm like, all right, if I could be that excited about a recruiting company in the middle of abject poverty across the world, that's probably what I should be doing.
Nice, man. Yeah, I've learned when I started my practice, I had one hire, then two, then three. And there's probably, when I got to like six, we held pretty steady for like 3 or 4 years. And there's part of me that was like, this is the team forever. Like, this is awesome. And as my business matured, I realized that's just usually not the case. Like, mm-hmm. like turnover is natural. And I've entered this season now of realizing, like, as a business owner, like, I always need to be thinking about talent. Like, it's not this thing that I can like do for a year and then I'm set for 5 years. I've gone through seasons where I'm like, hey, we just hired four people. It's great. And then two move to another state and one has a health issue and they leave. And you're like, am I starting over again? Nope. And so as when we talked for the first time, I was like, I feel like every advisor I talk to, they're either needing to hire and hesitant because they don't know where to find people. They don't know how to bring onboard people. And then the bigger the firms get, like recruiting is just in their blood. Like it has to be happening all the time. And so we have advisors from, you know, solo advisors listening to like, hey, we're part of big firms and running big firms. If you kind of give us the state of talent, like how should we be thinking about it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take it from a business owner perspective because I built this, we are now a traditional recruiting and staffing company. It's not how I started out to be. I don't even know what that is. I've just been told that's what we are now. So I've taken this from a business owner's perspective to how do you recruit? And so, I'm seeing there's really two models in the call it wealth management RIA space today. And it's either like you're owning the book yourself, and you're really good at, business development, or you provide a better ecosystem for advisors through your tech stack and through the culture of your organization, and you provide a culture around an independent experience, and so you're attracting advisors, independent minded advisors, to move to your model. And so you're exactly right. And like, as the owner of a business, you need to either be really good at one of two things. It's either business development, and if you can provide and identify and create a consistent flow of leads, new clients for your business, then it will be easy for you to recruit, because there's plenty of advisors who got licensed and realized they're not good at business development and they need someone else to pay them a salary and a little bit of incentive to take care of all the new leads that they have coming in there. Or you need to be incredibly good at recruiting and building a culture that is, it's very, very challenging to do, but the market is these independent-minded advisors who want to leave the wirehouses and the New York Lifes and the Northwestern Mutuals, and they want to do something independent, but they're not going to be independent enough that they just literally go open their own shingle. They want to be around a culture and some other type of attractiveness to bring them together inside of a culture. And so those are really the two models that I see and in the state. And then who you're going after is really going to fit in one of those two models.
Gotcha. So what was your advice for advisors listening? Does it fall apart? Like that people just don't know how to interview and they bring on the wrong people? Is it, hey, you can find the right person, but you can onboard them inappropriately. You're not compensating them well. Like where in your experience can it fall apart? Because I've interviewed a bunch of people and I'm like, they're telling me they're the right person. I kind of have to believe them to some degree. I'm trying to get wiser at discerning, is this a good fit? What's some of the secret sauce on that?
My opinion is it's a lead gen problem. they don't have enough leads of candidates. Mm-hmm. So if you've only got three or four, you're going to talk yourself into, you know, who's the best one of that. How many did you go through to get there? It's the friends and family model. They're just saying, you know, who do you know that's an advisor that may be open to a conversation, right? Which works for the first couple few, but if you're building a machine, it's not sustainable. So just like you need a lead gen model that consistently brings in qualified new clients, you need the same thing for recruiting, which is super hard to do. And then that allows you to have the repetition of conversations. You know, that was one of the hardest things that we had to do. I had to systematize what does a conversation look like around advisor candidates so that we can have a systematic conversation every time that produces a replicable or predictable result of who we should be introducing then to our clients that they want to have conversations with. So it's no different than lead gen for business development. I think that's the reason they think they can do it after one or two and then they make a hire and that's like, that's my guy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm guilty of that for sure. I think part of me is I want it so badly for people. And I'm like, hey, if we do it together, I think I can get you to be something that you're maybe not. And I've learned the hard way, like, I can't be in the business of trying to turn people into things that they don't think they are. They're telling me they don't want to be, because I'm like, no, trust me. If you become this thing, you're really going to thank me for it. It's like, then you're just caretaking people. And that's bad for business.
Yeah. Well, yeah, totally. One of the things that I'd say New York Life taught us really well is uncovering the thread of discontent. So and I took that one step further. A book I wrote, it's called The Capacity Model, How to Build Your Best Life. And in that, you know, that phrase, your best life, it's kind of cliche, but that's one of the first questions I ask people is, you know, Sten, what does your best life look like 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And paint that picture for me. And so, first off, I'm seeing how good can they tell a story, which we all know is super important when we're having advising conversations. We need to be able to ask those types of questions of our clients. And then when we get to the end, I ask them, why can't you get there with your current job? Mm. And that's going to tell you something about that person, how much ownership that they take. It's going to tell you, are they looking for an easy way out that, you know, what they currently are doing is hard. And, you know, maybe your firm is an easy way out. Maybe you're taking away the need for them to do all the lead gen and they really just need to sit and have, but you're going to find out a lot of important things about that person through that talk track.
That's good. So great book. I love Who Not How. And so for everybody listening right now, I know my mind goes like, okay, how can I do this better? How can I find more talent? Because I do feel like I've lived in a fear state at times of like, I'm keeping people longer than I probably should because I don't know where their replacement is yet. But if I had 10 people lined up waiting for the job, I'd probably make better choices because I'm not worried where the other people are. I've already identified them. What has been the progression in your business? And what would you tell an advisor that's like, this is probably not the best use of your time. That's why you've built your firm. And then when does a firm like yours come in? Is it like, I'm going to fully outsource this process? Where does an advisor go that needs talent?
Well, so I'll just tell you kind of my story, right? So when I left my career, right? You know, if I just stayed, it's 30, 40 million bucks I'm going to make over the next 20 years of my career with just kind of doing the same thing over and over. So I had to think, I got to build a company that's X, like 10X, 100X of that. Mm-hmm. So from day one, I had the mindset, which by the way, any advisor starting their own practice, I hope that's the dream that you have, like building something huge. So my mindset was, there's nothing that I can do physically, tactically in this business that can create an exponential enough factor that's going to be worth, you know, what I left. Hmm. And so immediately, as soon as I see myself doing a job, as soon as an advisor sees himself doing a job, who can replace that? Who can replace that? Who can replace that? So the who, not how, right? They're already doing that. So my job starting off the company immediately was like creating, what am I tactically doing every single day? And who's the person to start doing that? All right, I need to go hire them. All right, I need to go hire them. So immediately that created this wheel of I'm having talent conversations. And they weren't always talent conversations. They were networking meetings, right? But every networking meeting is a how do we fit together someday? Mm-hmm. And so I would tell any CEO of an advisory firm, whether it's a solo advisor or not, they should be having 2, 3, 4 of those networking conversations every single week with people that they'll build a Rolodex, right? Total old term. But I have an Excel folder on my desktop that's called a networking journal that my executive assistant, she goes and she looks at all my recorded Zoom meetings and takes all the notes from those every single day. Is this a future candidate? Is it a future client? Is it a future referral source? Is it a future person that we need to bring into our firm? Because the time to find them was 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago. So CEO of an advisory firm should be doing that no matter what. Now, I know that's not practical because if you're a solo advisor, right, you're doing all the other things. That's where we come in. When they go from 1 to 2, it's typically bringing on a client services rep. You don't need me for that, right? That's a friends and family hire. I'm happy to help. We don't make much money on that because it's not really a high paying job, but I'm happy to get my foot in it. I know it helps so much. Yeah. That's a friends and family hire initially. Where we typically help is somewhere between 5 and 20. And that's where like they're wearing a lot of hats, but they have some help now. And it's how do we start scaling? Yeah. And it's usually advisors, service advisors or lead advisors. It might be a marketing person or RevOps. We just brought a RevOps leader onto our team. Like that's a whole different conversation, but man, that is a super cool niche to get into. And then the whole data analytics, right? What does your database look like? What does your CRM look like? And how are we maximizing what's inside of that? So that's another position that we're filling a lot of right now too. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. Yeah. So I do think kind of the early hires is probably, I think every business owner advisor needs to develop some level of skill and awareness around this. I probably would say, hey, fully outsource it tomorrow and ignore it. Cause I've learned a lot. And I think there's a difference between delegation and abdication, where you're like, I'm just going to give this thing to Steve and not ask questions. And he's just going to solve all my problems versus, hey, I'm going to get with somebody that's an expert in this and work with them to get a better outcome.
Yep.
And so from that 5 to 20 space, what's the hire usually? I mean, like you said, there's the servicing type advisor. There's like the, hey, this person can actually go out there and make things happen type of advisor. Are you guys just building this Rolodex of those people that if like Legacy came to you and said, hey, I need two advisors, what's the process look like?
Yeah. So first off, I'll tell you, and that's where it usually starts. It's the CEO, the owner that's like, I need to replace myself. I need to step out of practicing and I need someone who can do that. So that's usually where they come to us. And then we move to other things. So we have these conversations all the time. I would not say that I like in any market in the US, I can say I've got 3 guys for you right now, but it's starting to get that way. And then like, there's databases, they're super expensive, but we've got those. And then we know how to have the conversation. I'd say one of the most undervalued things that we do is our onboarding process. So our team is split up. A lot of recruiting firms, they have full desk recruiters, which those people are doing the business development. And I mean, it's just like an advisor, right? They're doing the business development and they're actually servicing what they're selling. We have a split desk model. So we have our business development leads, but then our recruiters only recruit. That's all they do. And so they live in that world. But our onboarding process is done by our customer success manager. And because we do so many of these and it has to be systematized, that process of the questions that we ask, a lot of times clients are like, oh, I didn't think about that. And so we're helping build the job description. We're helping optimize the job description. We're helping them think through things that they probably haven't even thought of when they're hiring this. And sometimes I'll tell you, Sten, the answer is, I don't know. I'm open to anything. And we'll run with that. But over time, because we're forced, like, it still has to be binary. It's yes or no. Do we want a person with that? Over time, as we're sending them candidates, they're figuring that out. And so they get better and we help them get better by that process.
Nice. And is it a kind of traditional percentage of first year pay? What's the compensation structure look like?
Yeah. So one thing I was going to say, what we do not do. So I described earlier, like the in-house, they own the book of business and they're building a team to help serve that client base, or they're building a culture where they're bringing independent advisors who have their own book of business. We don't do that. We help people build companies where the company owns the book of business. So these are W-2 advisor roles and all the other help roles. And so in that case, yeah, we charge a flat or a percentage of first year compensation. It does get a little bit difficult, right? Depending on the advisor role, because most of them, you know, we're seeing base salaries of anywhere between 75 and 150, and then some kind of performance-based compensation structure around that. So we kind of have to anticipate what that is. And we typically agree to a flat fee on advisors, and then all the other positions is a percentage basis.
Yeah, nice.
Or roles they need us to fill, right? We bulk discount.
Nice. Very cool. So yeah. For everybody listening now, what's your advice based on your journey? They may not be ready to call you and say, hey, Steve, I want to hire you. I need 2 advisors tomorrow. Yeah. When it comes to talent, I think a lot of advisors that have been in the business a long time, that their firm stayed small. They overworked themselves. They really just created they're a boss to themselves that they would never want. They're working too many hours. They have too many tasks, but they stay kind of stuck there. I don't know if it's for the fear of like, I'm not a leader. I'm not a business owner. I just want to be an advisor.
Yeah.
What's your kind of word of caution to people that are stuck, not thinking about talent, not looking to grow their firm? Because they could make decent money for themselves and kind of just ride the wave. But most people I see that do that look back and they're like, I wish I would have done it a little different.
Yeah. So a couple thoughts around that. Great, great question. It used to be the only way you could be an advisor is if you own your own business. And some people, I'm like, they're just not cut out for that, but they want to be an advisor. And so they do that. If you are not going to grow your advisory practice and build a business with systems and people and a team and have a vision and a culture around that, it's a lot of work to stay as a solo advisor. And there's a lot of phenomenal organizations that will allow you to do the specific thing about advising that you like, whether it's just sitting with clients all day long, whether it's closing new clients all day long, and whether it's building plans. Like there's a lot of great firms that will just let you do that all day long, and you will probably make more money net working in their organization than you do with all the expenses that you have. And today, one of the things I love about advisory firms is there's this whole new generation of tech forward advisors that like any kind of working arrangement, remote, hybrid, wherever, like all of those exist. So if you're not, don't have the vision to grow your practice and it's just want to be a solo advisor, I think there's a lot of options that exist today that didn't. If you have this vision, that mindset of replacing yourself with whatever daily tactical tasks you're doing as often as you can. It might be monthly. It might be quarterly. That is the way to grow. And I would just say that, you know, that's the thing. And so one thing I think I shared with you, just to get your mind open to like, what are these positions that I can replace? I created a free resource, riajob.com. And it's the top 10 positions that a wealth management firm should be hiring for. I did a salary survey, so it's got regional salaries for all these different positions that you can see depending on, you know, what region in the U.S. you live, and then whether you're a small, medium, or large firm, what the target comps are for those. So the top 10 jobs that you can research and maybe kind of with job descriptions as well. So what the actual job description looks like, that's riajob.com.
Cool. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes too. That's great. So if anybody's listening now and they're like, I've been waiting for somebody like Steve, how do they connect with you, your firm? If they're like, I just need to get coached up and I need some help.
Yeah, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So Steve Perry, The Well Recruiting Solutions on LinkedIn, message me anytime. Our website is thewell.solutions. You could fill out a form there or go to riajob.com. And when you fill that out, I'll reach out to you and, you know, have a connect there. So all those ways work.
Cool, brother. Man, I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you, Stan. Thanks for having me.
Sten here. Hope you're doing well. I want to ask you for a favor. My legacy team is growing, and I'm looking to fill a couple positions. I'm looking for an experienced advisor, somebody that can come in right away and start serving clients to help us handle the overflow of opportunities we have. But I'm also looking for up-and-coming advisors, a pair planner, junior advisor that wants to learn with me to come help level up our team, but also allow me to help them level up and scale their business quicker over time. If you are interested in this opportunity or you know somebody that would be a potentially a great fit, please email us at arome@investlegacy.com. We're happy to follow up with anybody, have a conversation with them. So if you can keep your eyes and ears open, I'd really appreciate it.